Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
The most brilliant planet in our solar system is Venus, named for the goddess of love. It is closer to Earth than any other planet, 28 million miles away. Until sometime in the last half of the 20th century, it is still a planet shrouded in mystery, enveloped in a heavy blanket of clouds and steam. Because its surface temperature was believed to be several times that of Earth's, it was not thought possible for man to reach Venus and come back. Until one day, somebody did it. This was the opportunity, 5 days after his return from orbiting Venus, for the world to see Colonel Jeff Barton, the man of the hour. And of course, hardly had he returned to Earth from his brilliantly successful first step in the overall project, when the combined minds of our leading scientists and statesmen began to explore the next step, namely the ultimate colonization of Mars. All of us who behold Colonel Jeff Barton are impressed, I might say awed, by the outer calm and inner courage of this man who will head up and carry out what is probably the greatest adventure of all time. The next day, they had their opportunity to hear this national hero as he described his epoch-making voyage.
Now that we've been able to orbit Venus, we're a lot closer to our ultimate goal, Mars, the next stage of Project Vulcan. And none of us is going to rest very much until it is completed. In fact, I look forward to a good long rest in one of the houses we'll be building on Mars as part of the project. I want to thank you for your prayers, your good thoughts, and your wonderful down-to-earth welcome.
I think they love you as much as I do.
Oh, it's good to have you back again. I was getting awful tired of my own cooking. All right. I'll get the salad.
My steaks.
Nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery that reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
Well, we're back in the outer limits again, and we're exploring a second season episode originally aired on September the 26th, 1964, directed by Charles F. Haas and written, of course, by the creator, or one of the key creators of The Outer Limits, Leslie Stevens, and Daniel B. Ullman, with, of course, William Shatner in the lead role of the astronaut who, after his trip to Venus, comes back and is constantly cold, but he does have a warm heart. So, Anna Koshkinel, your thoughts initially with respect to cold hands, warm heart?
So I will start by saying that I resonate very much with the title and with his character because I am always cold, even though I've never been to Venus. I like this episode a lot. It was really good and easy to follow, and it was quite funny. So I really enjoyed watching it.
So good positive lines there. Of course, a lot of Star Trek alumni in there. Malachi Throne, of course, who would go on to be Commodore Mendez in the season one two-parter, of course, the Menagerie, where we also had Lawrence Montaigne, who would be the estranged husband or the husband-to-be, or the fiancé even, of T'Pring in the episode A Mock Time. And of course, we also had James B. Seeking, possibly best known not for his Star Trek role in Star Trek The Search for Spock, but as his role in Hill Street Blues. So very much focusing through that. You could say that in some instances, this was a love story. Effectively, it's the planet Venus, of course, goddess of love. We have the return from Venus. So it's very much the wife of the astronaut who kind of grounds the colonel in terms of the whole system, Colonel Jefferson, Jeff Barton, of course, Anne Barton, played by Geraldine Brooks. That initial statement, of course, where she kind of proclaims that he loves her more than any of the stars or the astral bodies in the sky and so on. Did you feel it was a romance at heart, or was it a case of no, this is hardcore science fiction throughout?
I think it was a major plot point, their relationship, and it showed to be supportive and loving. And I think it really brought the episode to, let's say, a higher score overall. And the way they interacted with each other and both characters actually were, you could see on them that they were in love with each other. And the way she was, a bit worried when he started drinking too much coffee or too hot. And it was nice, and it was a nice chemistry in between them.
The only monster scenario here, apart, of course, from the Venusian, or we presume the Venusian that's seen outside the spaceship, is, of course, the part metamorphosis of Barton's character into obviously his hands very much metamorphosing and changing. And yet, of course, at the end, it would seem that there's a gradual reversal of that after being faced with a lifetime of constant heat, followed by supplementary drugs and so on. His own metabolic system seemed to be kicking into place, and of course, he's perspiring. So we see that beginning of the end from that. Would you have liked to have seen more monsters? Because the Outer Limits was very much famous for its monster of the week and the way in which we see the monsters being appeared and put into place with that. Or did you feel that actually, in this instance, less is very much more?
Well, I think in 50 minutes running time, there was a bit of a stretch with the story. So probably if the episode was longer, it would have been nicer to have a bit more, let's say, monsters. But I think it was, let's say, a kind of good balance. I liked the slow progression of the storyline and how the change starts with the temperature and him drinking the boiling coffee, and after that, everything that happened. But towards the end, I feel when even a bit before he started going back, because thankfully we had a happy ending, I feel like I can't say that they ran out of ideas, but I think they were stretching the story a bit too much at times. But yeah, I know I like the monsters, and I liked it altogether.
Okay, had you seen The Outer Limits before? Was it a series? Because it tends to be overlooked. Most people tend to go for the Twilight Zone, or obviously series like Star Trek and so on. The Outer Limits certainly has its fandom, and indeed was reprised with a season in both the 1980s and in the noughties. But is it a series which you are aware of in Romania?
To be honest, no, I didn't know about the Twilight Zone, but I didn't know about this one. So I searched it a few days ago when I watched it, and it has a very good fandom, and the fans are really into it. And it was nice seeing it, and I think they have a good reason to be, because who doesn't love a story about a man that even though he transforms, he loves coffee, and then he has a nice relationship, and then he is able to have a happy ending. Although I didn't like when he dropped the steak. It was a wa what a waste of food, of good food.
Well, that might bring us into favorite moments or not so favorite moments, but I was certainly always impressed with the prologue and epilogue voiceovers by the control voice, of course, and the closing departure of the eternal, never ceasing search for knowledge often leads to dark and dangerous places. Sometimes it demands risks, not only of those who are searching, but of those who love them. These, in their own special way, know that knowledge is never wasted, nor is love. Again, something we seem to often miss these days, insofar as we don't really tend to get many explicit parables in our narratives and stories. Do you think that's something that maybe needs to be put right in terms of contemporary storytelling?
Yes, I do believe so, because it was nice, and all the little subliminal messages and all the everything that you have to learn throughout the movie, as you said, as you made a connection where in between the one of the plots, which is love with the planet being Venus. I think all these things are important. So yeah.
Phil Lynas very much went on record as saying he wasn't going to actually look at this particular episode. He's often been a critic of William Shatner's overacting. Do you feel that's fair in this particular point, or do you feel that actually Shatner pretty much nails him? Because clearly this is a few years before he started his first major role as James Tiberius Kirk.
I think he did a wonderful job with the episode. I feel like it was a goodish episode, but because of his acting, it was a better one. And I'm certain of it. So yeah, I really do believe he made a pretty good job, and that he actually did a better role than the one that was, I don't know if supposed to be, but he made a better movie. I
Well,
don't know if somebody will be able to make it as good.
there is of course the line that in the Twilight Zone episode a year or so earlier, he betrayed a man who actually saw a gremlin outside of his space of his aircraft. So he's clearly still seeing things outside his spacecraft. Something which arguably he went on to do with, of course, the Star Trek saga as well. But what about your favourite moments, Anna, from this particular narrative?
So it's probably gonna be very silly of me to say this, but my favorite moment out of the whole episode was towards the beginning when he was working on his papers and his wife came to him and they were talking about coffee as being the fuel, and she was telling him how much he's drinking, and he told her, I don't remember exactly, he told her how much time he has to work on, how much longer he has to work on the papers, and she started doing the math on how much coffee he needs, and it was, I don't know, it was to me, it was funny, and it was quite relatable because I do drink an unhealthy amount of coffee. So I'm gonna go with that as being my favorite moment, to be honest.
It'll be intriguing when Jessica joins us in terms of whether she's going to feel prejudiced against that because of her fondness for sweet tea. But that's for another debate at another time. And in terms of let's discuss the music. I mean, it's very much I believe actually it goes on record as being the first TV show to have ever used an artificial instrument or an artificial sound generator in terms of making the eerie outer space extraterrestrial sounds. It was also a key point insofar as the science faction people, as opposed to science fiction, that the white chamber in the lab was actually a thermal vacuum chamber, which was still used to test satellites up until relatively recently, and effectively enabled the temperature extremes to go from minus 300 degrees Fahrenheit to plus 300 degrees Fahrenheit. But that line about the noise study, James Tenney, who recorded on a 1962 record album called Music from Mathematics, played by IBM 7090 computer and digital to sound transducer. Did you feel that actually added to the eeriness, the strangeness of this episode? And did you think it supported it, or was it intrusive?
Well, I think the music definitely helped. It definitely brought a whole other vibe to the story. I did like the beginning a lot with the sound. I think it really helped get you into the story. And also, you were mentioning earlier, before the music, you were mentioning the voice. I think these two combined really helped you get into the story itself. So yeah, I think they did a pretty good job with that.
We'll add it to the mise-en-scène. Okay, let's talk characters then. Who from the range of characters that we have here, and there are a fair number, I suppose, in terms of you could include the reporters, you can include the electronics people, you can include the construction worker, you can include obviously Anne Barton as Geraldine, portrayed by Geraldine Brooks, Dr. Mike, seemingly just Dr. Mike, actually. We don't seem to have a surname for Dr. Mike, played by Malachy Throne, or indeed General Claiborne, or indeed William Shatner as Colonel Jeff Barton. Who are you going to go for, and which honorable mentions are you going to provide?
So obviously William Shatner and Geraldine Brooks were brilliant in this episode. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. So I'm gonna go with them, but I'm gonna have a special mention for Dr. Mike. And he was actually at times really funny, and I really enjoy seeing him. And I'm actually gonna search for other movies that have him in it because he was really good.
I think Malachy Throne was very much a quintessential character actor, passed away
Yeah.
relatively recently. But there's a wonderful series which is well worth checking out, also from the 1960s, called It Takes a Thief, which he actually co-starred with Robert Wagner in, a kind of variation on To Catch a Thief from the Cary Grant movie. But his role there is very much as a CIA handler for the. Thief of the title, basically played by Robert Wagner. So I'd certainly suggest that. And Malachy, of course, has appeared in both Star Trek Deep Space Nine and indeed the original series. So he had a fairly a substantive career. And I'm sure he'll appreciate whichever dimension he happens to be in, the fact that he was getting an honorable mention. Well, that's brought us neatly round before we actually speak to Jessica, of course, and hear some more from this particular Outer Limits adventure to your score. What are you going to go for?
Oh, I think I'm going for I'm gonna go for an 8.
The symbol, as we said before, of infinity, as far as China is actually concerned. So, certainly, it addresses a whole range of things, given the adventures that we're working through. And obviously, as a fellow coffee drinker, you could identify with the large amounts of caffeine that were obviously being consumed in this particular episode. For now, Anna Koshkinal, the control voice, will now let you go, and we'll move back into some more adventures from Cold Hands, Warm Heart.
Be a general, Colonel.
Wrong question. That should be, how did it feel to be a colonel, General?
I'll sum it up in two words, way out.
Can you tell us, General Barton, who else is going to be involved in Project Vulcans?
Several men, all specialists in their own fields of science.
You'll get a printed list of their names.
Is it definite that Venus will not sustain human life?
I can't answer that yet.
Well, isn't that why you made the trip?
Not entirely. Although Venus is close to Earth, it has always been a mystery to us, and you can't take chances with mysteries when you're planning something like the colonization of Mars.
Will you have the answer in time for the Appropriations Committee hearing next week?
I intend to. He won't if he spends any more time with you, gentlemen.
Are you carrying the ball to the committee, General Claiborne?
Oh, no, General Barton will do all the talking. He knows more about it than anyone else. Project Vulcan is his baby.
By Project Vulcan, you still mean the colonization of Mars.
Exactly.
What if they turn you down?
Well, we might try to raffle off General Barton.
I'm getting full of you.
Ah! as a general.
Hey.
Well, congratulations, General. Welcome aboard.
Come
on up. Come here, I want to show you something. Well, there she is, Jeff. The new space environment test chamber. Finished her while you were cavorting around up there in outer space.
What'll she do?
315 degrees below zero Fahrenheit to 275 above. And create a vacuum equivalent to 700,000 feet altitude.
Jeff, I noticed something on your report about vibration. I was wondering if it happened again after orbiting.
No, that's something I want to talk about with construction.
I'll be curious to see what kind of vegetation your cameras picked up.
Yeah.
Did you notice any equipment failure during the 8 minutes we lost contact with you?
I'm afraid I wasn't paying much attention at the time. Shoo. Maybe I'm allergic to planet Earth.
Not until after the committee meeting. Let's get to work.
Right.
Okay. See you later.
Yeah.
Sitting in the stand of the sports arena, waiting for the show to begin. Red lights, green lights, strawberry wine. A good friend of mine follows the stars. Venus and Mars are all right tonight.
Other islands.
Talk.
I heard you dictating your speech. I heard you dictating your speech, Jeff. And it was wonderful. And I was so proud of you. And I thought, this is no ordinary man. This is a man who had a dream. And he's making that dream come true.
Don't stop, Anne. Go on.
I thought, this is a man who has made himself a part of the history of all people and of all time. A man who... a boy who learned to fly into the future. My husband. My love.
In terms of details, it would seem that Venus and Earth are 38 million kilometers apart. Meanwhile, the Earth and Mars are 56 million kilometers apart. So although it seems as though we're heading off to Mars, Venus is actually the closer planet. That might or might not actually lend some credence to the experience, of course, of our intrepid adventurer, played by William Shatner, Captain Jeff, Colonel Jeff, of course, General Jeff, and the adventures that he actually had in this particular episode. We've also just heard the thoughts of Anna Koshkinel on this particular episode, and indeed, needless to say, some suitable music from Wings with Paul McCartney, a short clip from Venus and Mars, and of course, Islands by New Music. That's neatly brought us round to Jessica Bertus. And your take, Jessica, on this particular adventure back from the early 1960s, specifically, I think, 1964, when Cold Hands, Warm Heart received its first airing. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it's funny in the first... William Shatner is in not one but two space exploration shows. I think it's so funny that somebody looked at him and decided that this man just looks like he belongs in space, and that is his typecast now.
Well, not just that, Jessica, because as we also said, when we were looking at Nightmare and at 20,000 Feet, the Twilight Zone episode, he looked outside the airplane wing and he saw alien beings there. He constantly sees alien beings out there. He clearly has a track record for seeing alien beings outside the ship.
There's something on William Shatner is not telling us something, but he might be an alien.
He did go up with Jeff Bezos into space recently, of course, just a year or so ago.
Did he return to space? Maybe we'll never know. But I think that aliens, for some reason, I have a fear of aliens, and I don't know where this comes from, because I think, I don't know what my problem is. Maybe I was like traumatized by E.T. at a young age or something, but yeah, seeing that very burnt-looking alien just looking in the window of the spaceship, that was very creepy, even with the 60s graphics and everything. But I actually thought that this episode was very interesting. It was fairly straightforward. I think sometimes we've seen episodes that have a lot more complicated plot, and they have a lot more characters who are all over the place. And this one was more straightforward. He went to Venus and he came back. Now he's got some sickness and he's turning into an alien. And I thought that was, I think the idea of what aliens could kind of affect, like if they have germs or if they have something that we don't have, how could that affect us? I thought that was really interesting, because I don't typically see that in alien invasion or alien encounter media. So I thought that that was a very interesting idea. Typically, I feel like in movies with aliens, diseases are kind of seen as biological warfare, for aliens invading Earth. And in this one, it was kind of, well, we don't know if it was on purpose or not, but I just thought it was interesting that it was kind of this random side consequence of meeting an alien.
And of course, there's always the uncertainty of the whole space program. If we recall the first episode of The Twilight Zone, Where Is Everybody? We had the psychological impacts of isolation in an enclosed environment beyond the Earth and so on. And here we have something where you could almost see it's a descent into madness, because clearly his wife is very concerned, as indeed Anna pointed out, in terms of the huge consumption of coffee. I did suggest you might be concerned about the use of coffee as opposed to sweet tea, but maybe that's for another
That's
tale.
true. Maybe things would have gone much easier if they had just had sweet tea, been drinking that instead.
So, favorite moments then, Jessica, from this particular adventure?
I think that alien outside the window, even though I hated it, it was I don't like that kind of I don't know what my problem is, but that scene was very interesting. And I think Anne, also, their relationship was also very touching. I thought that they had a very sweet relationship. And I feel like it was kind of a fairly healthy marriage. And I think also him with his hands, that was a very creepy part. I mean, I think they did a good job with the makeup or prosthetics or whatever they did. I thought that it was, of him turning into an alien was very, it has a lot of interesting ramifications, but I thought it was very creepily interesting.
Yes, certainly the whole essence of how he was portrayed as actually being the heroic returning astronaut, very much in the character of John Glenn, of course, and even the name that we actually have in terms of the sort of line Colonel Jeff Barton, Jeffrey Jefferson Barton, does kind of carry that heroism that was very much part of the whole pioneering space race at the time, with obviously Americans and Russian astronauts effectively going up to battle for this. And this was clearly an attempt to actually again stake a claim on Mars. How did you feel the press corps actually dealt? I mean, they gave him a fairly easy ride basically in terms of the press reporters when they were out effectively asking, well, how did it feel to actually be in space and so on.
Yeah, I feel like you would be hounded constantly. You were somebody who, you're the only person who went to Venus. And I'm surprised that some alien group, some like alien conspiracy group wasn't trying to get their hands on him more. And just like, I feel like that would totally happen. Or maybe the internet has changed how people communicate, I think, quite a lot. So maybe people were approached things differently in the 60s. But I mean, nowadays, this would have been all over forums, and there would have been people everywhere trying to get it at him and get his photos. So I don't know. I think, yeah, he didn't receive a ton of attention for someone who went to Venus and is the only human being to have that honor.
So far, in terms of the development, of course, we saw Malachy Throne. Again, you may recall he was actually Commodore Mendez in the two-part episode of Star Trek: The Menagerie, the original series. Malachy Throne, again, somebody who's very keen, as we said earlier, with Anna, very keen in terms of a character actor. Although he didn't seem to have a surname here, he was just Dr. Mike. Obviously, the family doctor who was much trusted by Jeff to actually look after all sorts of things, even to the at the exception of the space doctors, who I don't think Jeff had any real faith in the space doctors. Although, of course, he does end up in the isolation tank. And there is that sense: was it all completely in his imagination? Was it all something which he just saw these the and he kind of was a victim of the illness that actually manifested this creature that obviously had contaminated him, although there is a suggestion at the end, as we said, that he was beginning to come to terms with it, or at least he was beginning to recover. He started sweating and perspiring. So that was a big change in the notion of maybe he was back on the road to recovery. What about favorite characters, though, Jessica?
I think Anne. I feel like Anne is just she's a sweet character, and I feel like Not a ton of characters in this episode were very, I feel like, intense. And I think sometimes when we watch certain shows, certain characters really do jump out at me. I feel like in Star Trek, the characters feel very individual. And or maybe it's just because they're so iconic. But in this one, I mean, Jeff, he was really going through it. I mean, I have to hand it to him, just drinking hot water and, feeling like he's turning into an alien. Like that's the way that he was able to handle it. I mean, I feel like I wouldn't have reacted very differently.
Yes, Geraldine.
But I think, sorry.
Yeah, I was just saying, Geraldine Brooks, who portrayed his wife, sadly passed away in 1977, actually, a fairly short-lived life, effectively born originally in 1925 in New York City, and of course
Wow.
known for Lassie, amongst others, basically, but still very much a key part of this particular adventure, shall we say. Anyway, she'll be obviously pleased that she received a nod in your favourite character. Anybody else that you'd like to give honourable mentions to?
The alien. I think the alien deserves a good mention. Because what? We don't see any other aliens. We did, like it's the one alien staring in the window. I wonder, I mean, did was there like an abduction? Was there a whole like probing with the alien where they're like trying to see what's making this human tick? Or was it he just looked in the window and that was enough for contamination for his species? Like species. I think that's very interesting. And it leaves so many questions about why they're on Venus. And I think I think the alien could do with some moisturizer, but I thought he had a very interesting look. It was very ET to me, I guess.
Okay, well, we talked a bit about the music. Any thoughts on the otherworldly music? Did you feel it actually added to this particular episode? Did it provide a suitably unearthly, strange effect to carry the plot along?
I think it was eerie, or maybe that was just the vibe I was getting overall. But I think the music didn't stand out to me quite so much as it does in Star Trek or The Man from U.N.C.L.E. And some of the other shows we watched. I thought that those had like very their the music was really fun. But I still liked it, but yeah, it didn't really stand out to me, to be honest, for as much. Maybe I need to watch more episodes. I think I've only ever watched one other one.
So let's go to your score for this particular adventure then, The Outer Limits, Season 2, Episode 2, Cold Hands, Warm Heart.
I think I'm going to give it probably a 7.5. I think it would be a 7, but it's kind of hilarious that their solution was like just throw him in the tank, and see how he does.
And of course,
So,
have his wife speak to him. Because clearly we
yeah.
must not underestimate the power of the romance there. Venus, of course, as we said earlier, the planet of
Yes.
love. So you have that romance carried through. And of course, the statement that Anne had actually made to the planets and stars that her husband had committed to the relationship, and certainly, despite the hot coffee, was very much connected with that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. I think that whole idea, I guess, of love and of Venus is a really interesting idea, and I feel like there's kind of like ideas around astronauts maybe not or having more difficult marriages because they're apart for so long. But I think that it's nice that their relationship seems so nice and so strong. And yeah, I think it was an interesting choice that they kind of centered a marriage in this episode rather than anything else, rather than his like celebrity status or something like that, which would have been interesting too. So I thought it was sweet.
Well, it seems to have been fairly consistent. Anna gave it an 8. You gave it a 7.5. I probably would also go for an 8. All things considered, I think certainly it's been, I think, unfairly treated. Looking at some of the reviews on IMDb, there are some who actually say it was the worst of the
Really?
Outer Limits series. It was a dud. It wasn't appropriate. We know that Phil Lynas, a semi-regular Resident Rewinder, wasn't a great fan of William Shatner's acting. Again, I think worthwhile sort of looking at again because I felt there were some nice slots.
Yeah.
One little slot which we didn't really comment on, which almost set it off on a completely different line. The opening sequence, the ticker tape parade, or the parade that Jeff is actually given. There is a moment where I thought that actually he was going to be assassinated by the person who actually becomes a camera person, because he kind of seems to set up as though he's going to take a shot obviously acts this returning astronaut, and in the end he's only actually operating his camera. I thought that was a nice little swerve that the director actually put in place there.
Clever. I mean, that could have been a very interesting plot if it had started out with an assassination. That would have been quite shocking, I think, for the time. But no, I didn't think it was that surprising that people are so upset about the episode. I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was I thought it was different than the other shows that we watched. But I thought that that was sometimes a simpler episode is nice. Sometimes it's nice to have a more straightforward plot. And I thought it's an interesting idea. Yeah, I thought it was good.
Well, next up, we stick with William Shatner for the third of our little Shatner exploration. Really? We obviously looked at Star Trek and his incarnation as Kirk with the apple last time. Now, of course, Cold Hands, Warm Heart. We're into the 80s now, the William Shatner of the 80s, in which he's very much into police procedural mode. And indeed, he is Sergeant T.J. Hooker, as opposed to J.T. Kirk. So an interesting switch there. We didn't actually mention that one of the other clear Star Trek connections were in Cold Hands, Warm Heart was, of course, the project that Jeff was actually involved with was entitled Project Vulcan.
I was going to say, I heard when the Vulcan, I was like, it made me wonder if this actually had a Star Trek tie-in or something. I guess not, but that feels like it can't be a coincidence. I don't know. Somebody watched that and then put it in Star Trek or something. Or I thought that was, yeah. I was like, there's too much of a connection here. It's aliens. It's all connected.
Indeed. And only sort of 2 years later, he would be on that five-year mission. But next week, as we mentioned, T.J. Hooker and Jerry Lee Lewis. And Arthur Weingarten, of course, the late, great Arthur Weingarten, who actually wrote this particular episode. It's called Deadly Ambition. That's next on Resonance Rewind. For now, to Anna Koshkinel, to Jessica Burtis, as ever, many thanks. And keep on resonating.
He hasn't stirred yet.
Just normal sleep.
There's not much time left.
Normal, Mike. What does that mean?
Don't build yourself up, Anne. We knew Jeff's body craved heat, so he's getting what he needed. After he wakes up, the general may get what he needs. Or he may not. But Jeff's body can't maintain normal human temperature. Even now, he's not perspiring. After he's out of there a while, well...
Sailing beside you in your love.
and I, we'd often go there to admire, sometime kneel in prayer. Lords and ladies lie in stone, hand in hand from long ago. Though their hands are cold, their love forever. Even the choir rehearses those songs. For Christmas is love now, and the moon sings my song. She had to fly.
Out there, it's such a lonely sky. They'll trap your wings, my love, and hold your flight. They'll build a cage and steal your only sky. Fly away, fly to me, fly when the wind is high. I'm sailing beside you in your lonely sky. Fly away, fly to me, and if you need my love, I'm sailing beside you in your lonely sky. I'll come in with the dawn. I'm sailing beside you in your lonely sky. All the winds of the world. I'm sailing beside you in your lonely sky.
You wiped your face. Perspiration.
Is it warm in here, Jeff? Very warm?
Yes, it is warm, isn't it?
He's coming around. He's coming around by himself.
Hello. Colonel Hunt, fast. Hello, this is... Yeah, that's right. Now look, I want two private rooms on the fourth floor right away. Call the Air Surgeon General's office and tell him I want the top men in pathology, etiology, toxicology, semiology, dermatology.
The eternal, never-ceasing search for knowledge often leads to dark and dangerous places. Sometimes it demands risks not only of those who are searching, but of others who love them. These, in their own special way, know that knowledge is never wasted, nor is love. We now return control of your television set to you until next week at this same time, when the control voice will take you to the Outer Limits.